next case is 97-2648, Cabot County Bar Association versus Boise Coche. Go ahead and make your argument, and we'll decide afterwards if the bankruptcy case should suspend this case.
Okay. Your Honor, this case presents a couple of points. The first one is this: whether or not the disciplinary action could be brought in reckless disregard of Governing Board Rule 5, and whether or not the Board of Commissioners on grievance and discipline will engage in fraud, collusion, and deceit of this court. Another aspect is this: we have fraud is perpetrated on this court. Whether or not that fraud itself doesn't vitiate the entire proceeding. Most intricate in this case is a due process of law that has been violated. Let me begin with: first, this court has set forth the Governing Bar Rule 5, specifically detailing procedures with which actions should be brought. No notice of the allegation was given to me before the Cuyahoga County Bar Association voted to proceed with disciplinary action. I was not given the opportunity to respond to any allegation. The reason is very clear. As a background, the man in charge of investigating this allegation, Mr. Howard Schulman, told the chairman of the panel that his father lost his license over allegations involving black people in Cleveland in the 70s. That in itself clearly shows his racially motivated objective. The Bar Association now tended to bring allegations that are fabricated when the disciplinary counsel had dismissed the case. They said, I have defrauded a little bit. During the hearing, they claimed they had no evidence. Why bring it in the first case? Secondly, is this: on cross-examination, both the grievance, the Higgins, whom I represented from trial up to the Court of Appeals, up to the kind of case was appealed to this court, admitted that she knew, one, that under the law, she authorized me to charge her for her legal services. She stated in the agreement, out of pocket expenses. The Supreme Court of the United States has said that out of pocket, her legal expenses include out-of-pocket expenses, and they have to be billed at market rate. I didn't bill her at market rate. I billed her substantially below market rate. Next, they said that the charges, the claims, the expenses were overstated. There was nothing about it. They had no evidence. What happened here was this: that these expenses themselves, some of them were accrued, like the professional expenses. We contacted various experts, and the experts themselves gave us charges, and I have to present it to the client. Even when she requested that I have additional told her that I could not go along with engaging in accruing expenses when I cannot pay. By the time this court suspended me from practice of law, the first thing I did was to contact the board. And the board counsel, Bruce Dingle, informed me to use the lodestar model to calculate the hourly rates that have been expended over multiplied by my hourly charge. That was done and reported to my various points. I have already exceeded the retainer fee in terms of expenses. These cases were complicated discrimination cases with evolving changes from the United States Supreme Court and our Circuit Court of Appeals, the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. Now, let me deal with certain issues that are unique here. Wilkerson never filed a grievance against me. There was no finding whatsoever. What happened was that the investigator, Mr. Shulman, surreptitiously bypassed the entire process and brought this allegation without even hearing from me. On cross-examination, Mr. Shulman was asked if Wilkerson authorized me to use the money that we are placed for experts to pursue his appeal. Would that be a violation of the Code of Professional Responsibility? His answer was emphatically no violation. He turned around and amended the complaint after the case was submitted that it was excessive fee. How excessive would this fee be? Well, it is, Wilkerson was represented before the Ohio Bureau of Employment Services, represented in the district court, represented in the United States District Court of Appeals, represented in Calvert County Court of Common Pleas, represented in Calvert County Court of Appeals, and I actually filed a petition to this court when this court accepted his case. Wilkerson had a viable case. His subsequent lawyer had never tried a discrimination case. When he was offered $20,000, he shaken and signed Wilkerson out. Right there on file, there was a case settled by Eaton Corporation similar to Wilkerson's situation for $1 million. It's called the Shade of Eaton Corporation. There were two other cases from other places, one from Cincinnati area, settled for $2 million. I had all of them there in on file. This, Mr. Gallup, never included file. Now, before the board, the investigation files were removed and destroyed by Mr. Marshall immediately I filed a motion to dismiss. I filed my closing arguments. Mr. Marshall removed them from the file and never submitted it. I have not had a fair hearing. The panel never had my arguments. The board never had my arguments. This is certainly a grotesque fraud has been perpetrated on this court. I filed my brief and request for supplemental of the record, served Mr. Marshall, he still refused to produce the records. Subsequently, on a show cause order, the show cause motion, he produced the closing argument. So how can the panel be fair to me, and how can I have a fair hearing when it is that the findings of the panel were clearly erroneous, not supported by the record. My arguments were never heard. That is very disturbing. The temple of justice has been poisoned. The fire. It's like finding a rat in a cookbook. Do we drink it? Absolutely not. We have to discard the rat and discard that cookbook. And now investigate. How did I get into that? What I submit to you is that this case ought to be dismissed. The rule of law must be obeyed. There has been no application of the rule of law here. It has been recklessly disregarded, both by the Calvary County Council's men and the board itself. It is very pathetic. I'd like to reserve.
Let's accept everything you said for purposes of argument. One thing that I noticed that bothered me is You said to a client, give me $2,700 additional to pay for a transcript, and then you never paid the court reporter. Is that true?
That is not true. I paid for the transcripts. The transcripts were there. She said she had to pay for additional transcripts. Where is the money that you paid? No evidence, no counsel check, nothing. The transcripts, three of the transcripts that I bought, summaries, if you look at the timesheets that they told me that wasn't there, that was on file, is all there. There was no cent. In fact, one of the clients, Mr. Sagan, I borrowed $40,000, $20,000 from my bank, second mortgage. My house has been foreclosed on that, to try a case for 3 months. Nobody's paying me for that now. Higgins has been paid. She has a Mercedes Benz riding on her car, but to pay for the services of the court reporter, she didn't pay. You look at the record itself, there was no time that $2,700 was paid to me and transcripts were not prepared. The transcripts that were prepared were filed, they were outlined, submitted to the client. So it's clearly erroneous, and I to take strong exceptions and vehemently find that to be very reprehensible. I come from a very reasonable family, and that input on me a strong sense of hard work and
Thank you, Mr. Cochin. Mr. Shulman.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'm here on behalf of the Certified Grievance Committee of the County Bar Association. The thing that I find most disturbing about the respondent's conduct is that after all the things that he did that resulted in his being suspended by this court a number of years ago, after all the things that he's accused of now, he's demonstrated absolutely no remorse for misconduct. He's demonstrated absolutely no recognition that he has done anything wrong. Instead, everyone else is at fault. I'm at fault, charged with racism as a result of something my father was involved in 15 years ago. Judge Marshall is at fault. It's a conspiracy involving Judge Marshall against the respondent because a document or two documents were not in the record when the respondent looked for them. But the respondent, in his mind, at least as he contends, has done absolutely nothing wrong and has no remorse.
But he appeared at the panel hearing. He didn't. He represented himself at the panel hearing.
He did, Your Honor.
Is that correct? And so all of the findings by the panel and then the board of the amounts of money that he charged his clients and didn't do work for and didn't give back and so forth, he had a chance. He had an opportunity, I assume, to respond to those charges. Did he?
He did, Your Honor. It lasted almost the entire day.
And what sort of evidence? I mean, did he offer some sort of evidence to show that the panel was incorrect, or what was the nature of the? And we've got him saying that the system is, you know, is a rat in a bottle, which is hard to believe. And you're saying obviously that these things are all true. What is there some middle ground?
Well, there's some very good points, Your Honor. It was interesting to me this morning that respondent, and I wrote this down as a quotation. Where is the evidence that his client had paid for the transcript? She submitted no evidence, he said, no canceled check, nothing. He's complaining about that, but at the hearing, he contended that he had incurred these charges from four different experts. And for three of these experts, there was no evidence that they had done any work, no correspondence with them, no communications with them at all, no bills indicating any telephone calls, no bills from the experts, no checks written to the experts.
So the conclusion, obviously, is that he billed the client for a substantial amount of money, saying it was for experts that were never used.
And with respect to the one expert that was used and the one expert who did submit a bill, the evidence was He never paid the bill. He charged the client on the same statement of expenses $4,600. The bill was only $2,000, and it was never paid.
Is that Mr. Burke?
That is Dr. Burke, yes. The other $2,600 was money he paid Dr. Burke for another case, because Dr. Burke wouldn't participate in this case until he was paid for work he had done for the respondent earlier that had not yet been paid. So he submitted no evidence that any of those charges were justified. There's nothing in his fee agreement that would have allowed him to charge $14,000 plus for the service of a paralegal. It clearly was an effort to defraud his client by charging her, billing her for expenses that were not incurred. Instead of recognizing what he has done wrong, instead of demonstrating remorse for what he has done, he treats this entire process like it's some kind of a game where he can play a trump card that will delay the process for a number of months. And his recent filing, which I just received yesterday, claiming that this hearing should be stayed in this bankruptcy that he filed in 1997, is just one in a long series of attempts of that nature. He originally filed a motion to extend his time for filing his answer. When that was granted, when the time came around, he didn't file an answer. Instead, he filed a motion to stay, arguing that he was going to file a mandamus and a prohibition in this court, or arguing that he had on February 3rd filed it. That was denied because there was no mandamus, no prohibition action filed in the court. He represented to the board panel that he had filed it, when in fact he did not. Then he filed a motion to dismiss, which was denied. He subsequently filed a second motion to dismiss, which was virtually identical to the first motion to dismiss. That was denied. Then he finally filed a mandamus and prohibition proceeding with this court on the eve of the hearing before the panel. And that was denied. The panel proceeded with the hearing. After the hearing, he claimed, as another way of attempting to get a delay, that he was sick, although he only appeared to be ill at the times he was arguing for a stay of the proceeding. He appears to be very capable of defending himself throughout the proceeding that day. And this bankruptcy proceeding is just one more.
You haven't had a chance to respond to that in writing, but do you have an opinion about? There's some bankruptcy courts that don't take filing in the bankruptcy court as an automatic stay of a state proceeding. And this one would seem to me to be why we should defer action on a discipline action because he filed bankruptcy. I'm not sure I understand. Do you have any? You don't have anything on that?
I Xeroxed the statute and the annotations. I didn't have an opportunity to read any of the cases because I don't have access to the bankruptcy.
Well, we'll do that, but.
The statute is 11 U.S.C. Section 362. It only provides for an automatic stay in certain situations, and in other situations, such as an action or proceeding by a governmental unit to enforce such governmental unit's police or regulatory power, there is no stay that operates. And the head notes that I read indicated, for example, the suspension of a real estate license could continue, and a license revocation proceeding of a state medical board against a debtor, against the debtor, the licensee, based on allegations of gross negligence in care of patients and dishonesty in financial affairs, is exempt from the automatic stay provisions. And another case that I read indicated that the issue is whether or not there is anything in the process that is going to give some priority to the state or to the board over the other creditors, the debtor.
Counsel, could you just hit the high points of what the problem and the issues are, certainly what you think are the undisputed facts that merit disbarment?
Yes, sir.
At this point, that not the who did what at what hearing, but what are the reasons?
I believe it's undisputed that the respondent sent Carol Higgins a statement for expenses that was fraudulent and included charges for bills he never received, perhaps for witnesses who never even existed and never provided any services. Those would be three expert witnesses. The fourth expert witness, he submitted a bill for an inflated amount of money for a bill that he in fact had never paid.
And he collected all of that?
No, he did not collect all of it, because in the process of collection, the grievance was filed, and I am not aware of any of his activities to collect upon that after the grievance was filed.
So it's the bill itself rather than...
That's correct.
...than the money that he pocketed.
That's correct.
That's one.
Except that, I take that back, he did obtain money from Carol Davis to hire one expert witness. He also obtained money from Roger Wilkerson to hire an expert witness. And he never used that money to hire an expert witness. That was $2,500, I believe, also.
That he gave to Burke?
Pardon?
That he gave to Dr. Burke?
No. With Roger Wilkerson, there was no expert hired at all for this case. He also took on Roger Wilkerson's case, which did not have any merit to it, and obtained an $11,000 non-refundable retainer from Mr. Wilkerson. He produced it.
Sorry? It's on, I saw the claim that there was no merit.
Yes, sir.
To the case, that's undisputed.
Well, the respondent disputes that there was no merit to the case, but Mr. Wilkerson, in fact, after being terminated, obtained a job that earned him more money. So he would not have had any damages from his termination, even if he had a valid claim for wrongful termination. He also...
That's a hard and fast rule. You obtain new employment at a greater rate, there are no damages from wrongful termination.
There are no damages from wrongful termination unless there was some psychiatric or psychological injury, because the damages are your lost income, and you're required to mitigate.
Sure.
He did, in fact, mitigate, and his mitigation was greater than the income that he lost. In the interim 4 months between finding the new job, he had received from his employer, Eaton Corporation, a severance package that paid him his full compensation during that period of time, and he did not even lose any benefits. His health insurance remained unbroken throughout that period of time.
Wasn't he also charged with retainers and 40%?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. And this is, in fact, the same fee agreement that resulted in his suspension of his license in the matter involving the parent poppers in the earlier proceeding. And it's the same fee agreement he has been charging all along.
So for the gentleman who had no damages, or at least you assert he had no damages, he collected, what, $2,500?
$11,000 in the retainer, and I believe $2,500 plus some additional money in expenses. I don't know about the other expenses, but the $2,500 for the extra witness was never used.
So there the offense is an excessive fee.
An excessive fee and the fraudulent charge for the expense of an extra witness. Then with respect to Ruby Randolph, he obtained from her the same non-refundable retainer. He, however, was suspended from the practice of law during his representation of Ruby Randolph. He had accomplished nothing for her prior to that suspension. She had to obtain another attorney, and he refused to refund any of her money that she had paid him.
Maybe this doesn't compare, but we have a number of lawyer lobbyists.
In some way, there was a requirement that he reimburse people for his victims. court is wrongdoing. And one of the things that disturbs me most is that throughout the past 4 years, I believe, he has not made any effort at all to pay back one penny to the ferry buyers, which was a particularly egregious situation where he represented them for a period of 6 months and he walked away with approximately $12,000 and was still billing them $2,500, whereas they were out $6,000 as a result of his representation. So, I have a short period of time left. The respondent is an intelligent man. He's very intelligent. He knows what he's done and he knows what he's doing. He understands all of the machinations he has attempted to go through to obtain delays in his proceedings. He understands how he has been obtaining his money from these clients, and it disturbs me greatly that he has made absolutely no effort to fund any of that money, and he's demonstrated absolutely no remorse for any of the things he's done, and no recognition at all that he's done anything wrong.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Schumer. Mr. Okocha, you've saved 3 minutes of your time.
Yes, Your Honor. I think one of the things that is interesting when he mentioned the bank records is in the bankruptcy court today, bank records and their lawyers are facing contempt charges for perjury and obstruction of justice before the bankruptcy court because of the statements that they made leading to my disability in this court. They were untrue. Secondly, is a disagreement that he is making amounting out of the molehill from was patented after the Supreme Court decision where the Supreme Court approved the agreement in Venger versus Mitchell. The agreement itself was taken verbatim from Venger's agreement. Thirdly, he mentioned sometimes that I collect money and I did not pay extras. A client called the money that I paid you for extras, use it for my appeal. Do I not follow the client's instruction? I did so. Higgins paid me $2,500, said pursue my federal case. I pursued her federal case. She never paid for her state case. There was no money taken from any of this money.
Did you offer all that? Is that all in the transcript of the hearing?
It's all in the transcript, but you find that the findings never bear out in the transcript.
To the clients, are there statements from the clients that would support what you're saying?
Correct.
Affidavits, or they testify to that?
No.
Affidavits? Or?
The Wilmington was not called to testify. They never subpoenaed any of the experts. They knew the experts. And Higgins, all the records that I have containing this case, immediately I was suspended, I turned them over to the clients. I requested that the clients come with the records. They never came with the records. So I was left with just to defend myself with what I got from the courthouse. The mistake in Bob's statement was a typographical error where it is. My paralegal added the 2,600 paid to Bob and the 200, the 2,000 that he billed.
Counsel, these retainers, the $11,000 retainer, was that as against a fee, in other words, the 40% contingent fee, were you charging a contingent fee on top of the retainer, or did the first $11,000 of your share of any fee earned be charged? Was that charged back against the retainer that you received in advance?
As this agreement are structured, Your Honor, is that the retainer fee is, this is a discrimination, it's civil rights discrimination case under federal statute.
Complex case, I understand.
Yes. So the retainer fee is separate from the 40% of the amount recovered. And that retainer fee, because for instance, like the Eaton case is dragged on for more than 5 years. And in fact, I will tell you, Higgins was the first case in Cuyahoga County that was public policy exception in private action in Cuyahoga County. These cases were filed
he had no expert to show that they were not viable. None. They were viable. So you cannot take his word that they are not viable. No expert. The, all the clients recovered money. Wilkinson, I helped him get his severance pay, 30,000. I offered, and he settled his case because of the indebtedness of his counsel, for 20,000.
After you were asked, that's what?
After I was asked. But initially, the offer itself, Wilkinson had damages because he lost employment.
He's the one that got another job at better pay?
He got another job 5 months later.
At better pay?
I do not know whether it's a better pay. He never told me whether it's a better pay.
But he was paid $20,000 even so.
He was paid $20,000, yes. And you look at, Your Honor, in this whole thing, I was the one that expended my time, my money. He used the word on empty. He has not showed any evidence whatsoever, no shred of evidence, that I did any of this piece. I worked very hard, Your Honor, and I don't deserve to be treated with such type of unsubstantiated allegations.
Mr. Coche, if we were to agree with the finding of the panel and the facts and the board, what do you think your sanction should be?
Well, Your Honor, if it is you, for you to agree with the panel, let me start with that. First, if it is that the findings do not be out in the record, it will be not necessary for you to agree. You cannot just agree because the president didn't find it. The record doesn't be out. Secondly, is this, there's only one mistake here, which is a typographical error made by my law firm. If I had known, nobody told me about this error, about it.
Okay, we've heard that. I'd like to know, if we decide that the panel is correct in its findings of fact, after having heard you and after reading the transcript, what do you think the sanction should be? You asked us to dismiss the complaint. No sanction. But what if we find that the panel is correct?
Okay, if you find that the panel is correct, understand that this has happened prior to my first suspension. And I should not go through this. For 4 years, I've not practiced law.
Under the previous suspension.
Right? Yes. And so I have paid a price. Allow me to come back. And I have suffered my father died as a result of my suspension. I still bear the guilt. And it's still teaching me a lot. My two children, they need me. So a reprimand. I lost. But the fact of the matter, I checked with the board, what do I do? And they told me, just do X, Y, Z, multiply this. They told me, pay them back, I will tell you, I will have gone to my dad, borrow me money, and pay it back.
You use your time.
Thank you,
thank you. Case is submitted, you'll be advised of our opinion. Marshal, please turn to court.
All rise.